ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Let's get started.
Motor Talk with Toby Hagen.
Toby is a professional motoring writer. He undertakes paid contract work for various brands as an individual and in his businesses, and this commercial work is entirely separate from his editorial reviews. He's committed to accuracy and fairness in all his reporting and maintains full editorial independence across all the content he produces. Toby, good evening to you. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Great to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Now, likewise, so I can hear listeners all over the land saying, yes, thank heavens, Toby's here. Stop talking about politics and start talking about things that matter. All right, more cheap EVs coming. The GWM Aura 5. This is only $33,000, a bit over. Drive away.
Yeah, that's right. It's already been on sale for a couple of weeks, but it's the cheapest electric SUV on the market. And interestingly, I mean, you look at this, and the other one is the Leap Motor B05 or B05, that's not here yet, but it's $35,990 drive away. And, you know, you look at those compared with similar petrol or even hybrid alternatives, and it's generally undercutting, particularly the Japanese brands and the Korean brands, not so much some of the other Chinese brands in terms of their petrol-only ones, but certainly price competitive.
Yeah, BMW X5 has grown some teeth.
Sure has. Got some buck teeth going on. It's quite a distinctive look in this car.
Like, you can't say buck teeth and BMW in the same sentence, Toby. No. Oh,
I don't know. But it is a very, very different look. This is the fifth generation of the X5, and it's if you look at it over the years, it's a natural evolution, and then it's got to this one and gone extremely different to the previous ones, and they've done something quite different with the lights too. So often we're seeing these days with the LED light signatures in the front of cars, you see brands trying to create their own look, and with this one they've actually created sort of two X's in the headlights, so quad lights and an X in each one. So it's very, very different to look at, but they're also doing an iX5 version, so an electric version, and it's going to have 845 kilometres of range, which is enormous. It'll be, assuming nothing else happens in the meantime, it'll be the longest range electric car in Australia. So it's, pretty wild.
Mm-hmm. All right, I mentioned that mainstream vehicle-to-grid charging is getting closer. This has been a complaint from a number of listeners over the time that I've been broadcasting with you. What's going on?
Well, look, there's a number of brands working on it. Kia and Hyundai have just announced that they've hit a bit of a milestone in terms of getting it to work with the latest protocols, and they're looking to unleash it on a couple of their cars in the third quarter, which started yesterday. So it's sometime in the next couple of months, we're expecting them in the Ioniq 9 and the Kia EV9 to allow vehicle-to-grid charging. So that will allow you to obviously power your house from the car, and keep in mind these are big batteries, around about 100 kilowatt hours. Now, a big battery in a home would be, most home batteries are sort of, you know, 15, 20 or 30 kilowatt hours, somewhere around that. A big one would be 40 or 50 kilowatt hours. These things are 100 kilowatt hours in the car. So
keep your house going for days.
A week or more on a lot of houses. So you potentially got a lot of electricity there. The unknown, or a little bit of an unknown, is the hardware that needs to be put on your house. So there's not a whole lot of options at the moment, and my understanding is they're around about $7,000 or $8,000. So there's that initial outlay, which is a significant outlay, obviously, to put on your house. I think that will obviously competition will kick in, and hopefully there'll be more options over the next few months or at least year or so. Mm-hmm. One of the things a lot of the car makers are trying to tackle with this is battery warranty or longevity. So, you know, an EV, they're designed generally for a few thousand cycles of the battery is what they sort of assume it's going to do. And people think that a few thousand isn't much. But if your car's got 400 or 500 kilometres of range, you're looking at well over 1 million kilometres from it. Now, your average car gets used for about an hour a day. So suddenly you're going to have a battery sitting in this car that potentially could be used for 24 hours a day. It could be, you know, charging when it's cheap, charging from the grid when it's cheap, discharging when it's expensive, powering your house, feeding back into the grid.
So under it could be new used plan, you get three hours free during the middle of the day. Yeah.
Indeed, but it's capped at, I can't remember what it is, 20 kilowatt hours or whatever. Okay. But look at that compared with that car. It's only going to fill up a fifth of the battery. But
still.
But so it's a... It's interesting to see where it's going, and I think, you know, by the end of the year, hopefully, it will now start to make a fair bit of sense, and I know there's a number of the Chinese brands looking at it. There's a bit going on.
Are you saying that, what, if you do this, though, that it's going to shorten the life of the battery?
No, that's the thing. So that's one of the things Kia and Hyundai have looked at. They're now confident that it won't. The car will, the eight-year warranty they put on the battery, that it will still be fine under that eight-year warranty. No, they've done a lot of work on that to ensure that they can meet the warranty obligations. But it was just another consideration that I also believe the battery manufacturers, keep in mind most brands buy the batteries from suppliers, big ones like Panasonic and CATL and so on. And apparently some of those battery manufacturers were saying similar things, you know, hey, we need to consider the warranty implications and what's going to happen. But as I said, to Hyundai and Kia, which are part of the same group, the Hyundai group, have both said that they're now confident that that will be fine.
Okay. Calls, 1-300-800-222 is the number. Ian from Newcastle is first up, if we could find him. Sorry, Ian. Find my phone thing. I'll be Apple's here. G'day, Ian.
Oh, g'day, Philip. G'day, Toby.
What's up? Cable theft.
Yes. We've had a wave of cable theft. I'm in Newcastle.
Yeah.
And we have some Newcastle Council fast chargers. And the cables have recently been cut off.
Mm.
And one of them was, a car was charging when the cable was taken.
What are they, nicking the copper out of it, something like that?
Yeah. And also Tesla superchargers up at Raymond Terrace. And I understand also down on the Central Coast. And it's really disruptive if you've got an EV. What does Toby, any comments, Toby, on that?
No, I mean, it's obviously a concern, obviously an issue, and security might have to be beefed up. The only thing I've heard, I was chatting to someone today about it, and they said that the replacement cables they're putting in have he understands they potentially have some theft deterrence in there. So it's some sort of mesh around it to make it harder to slice the cable. But also apparently they're starting to put, some of them are looking to put things like paint or other things in there that when you slice it will create a bit of a mess for them. So it won't necessarily be too appealing. So, you know, I tend to think this will be a short-term problem. You know, we've had with things like catalytic converters in exhaust systems years ago, not as much in Australia, but in other parts of the world where they were stealing exhaust systems to get the platinum or whatever it was out of there. So there's there's a bit of that going on too. But, you know, hopefully it will be a short-term issue. But I believe the industry's already coming up with deterrents to try and make sure that it doesn't become more widespread.
You'd think a camera on it would...
The camera should sort it out.
It should sort a lot of people out.
You would have thought so. But you know, something that will also physically stop it or at least deter it would also be a good move.
Thanks, Ian.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, no, thanks for raising it. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Alan from Bulleye. G'day, Al.
G'day. I'm thinking about, I put a deposit down on a Zeekr X.
Mm-hmm. Have you done your dough is what you're asking, is it?
No. The availability is for about another 3 months before I could even see it.
Mm.
Do you think I made a wise move?
Yeah, look, there's the Zeekr X, as you probably know, is a bit more of a premium. They're positioning themselves as a premium brand, so it's a little bit more expensive than some of the other ones. You know, other ones similar size, a JQ J5, a BYD Atto 2, Geely EX5 is even a little bit bigger, for example. But no, I think it's I always thought the Zeekr X was a pretty good car, and certainly the update that they introduced a few months ago has made it an even better car. So the negatives, it's they've chosen very much to go down the path of more dynamic driving, sportier driving at the expense of comfort. So it's firmer, it's a little bit firmer in the suspension. But I was chatting to a colleague about this recently, and it's actually sort of refreshing. Some of the Chinese cars, some of the newcomers, aren't that well tied down, and they're not quite boat-like, but they're not exactly enjoyable to drive. They're a little bit floaty, some of them, and this one's definitely not that. So it's certainly, you know, there is a trade-off, as I said, but it's certainly a decent thing to drive. And I think what they've done with the cabin, with the interior, is a huge step up on before. So it's a pretty good thing. But you know, there's a lot going on in that market, in that electric small SUV market. There's a heap of good options there, and that's one of them towards the more premium end.
Yeah, I had a test driver, but of a 2-year-old one. which was not the the latest model.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They didn't have any stock.
Of the other one, yeah, yeah. So, no, the new one's a step up. The only thing, I'm not a fan of the, as you probably know, on both the Zika X and the 7X, they've got buttons instead of door handles for the top-of-the-range ones. I think they're optional now rather than standard, so you can option them. And I wouldn't be ticking that box. It's sort of a bit gimmicky, and you've got to be sort of standing back from the door because it's got sensors and so on in the door to make sure it's not going to bang into people or other items. So you press the button, and if you're standing too close to the car, it will decide not to open it, so then you've got to open it yourself anyway. Then you get in the car, put your foot on the brake, and it automatically closes the door. So it's a little bit, you know, it's a bit fun to show your friends the first time, and then it's a bit gimmicky after that. It is the one feature that's similar to a Rolls-Royce, so you can tell your friends if you've got that, that you've got the self-closing doors like a Rolls-Royce.
There you go, Al. All right.
Can you just tell me what, another thing? I've got a top speed of 190 kilometres an hour. Is that right?
Oh, I don't know off the top of my head. You're probably right.
You're not allowed to go that fast, Al.
No, not at all.
Yeah, my wife tells me.
Thanks, Al. See you, mate.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Hope it arrives safely. 1-300-800-222 is the number. This is an edition of Motor Talk. In the footy, by the way, the Lions have beaten the Cats 117-101. In the latest footy results. All right, now Martin has been hanging on there. Sorry, Martin. Thanks for waiting.
That's okay. My question is, I've got a Toyota Ute, a 2010 model, and the oil filter on the engine clearly is upside down, and when you loosen it off, of course, the oil goes all over the engine.
Yep.
And when you want to put the filter back on, I like to fill my filter up with oil. And, of course, the oil runs out. They haven't even got a little neck around it with a spout on to put the oil in one place. I just wonder why they do that.
Oh, I'm not sure why the engineers chose it for that car, but wouldn't you normally, when you're draining the oil, wouldn't you take the sump plug out first, drain it out of the bottom, then loosen the oil filter, and then it'll then go through the engine out the sump plug down the bottom? Would be the normal way I would have thought you'd do it. And in terms of filling the oil filter up with oil, often some people will rub a little bit of oil around the seal, like the rubber seal or something. But I don't know if I'd be rushing. I'm not a mechanic or an engineer on this sort of thing, but, I don't know if I'd be trying too hard to fill that up. I think it'd sort itself out. But, yeah, normally you'd go to the sump plug. So the sump plug under the car, go to the sump, undo that, and take the plug out and make sure you've got something underneath it to catch all the oil, and then that will do that, and it will drain the filter at the same time, I would have thought.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Martin, thank you. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Frankston is the home of Don. And he's on the line. G'day, Don.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I've got a 2018 compliance-plated BMW 330i M Sport and love it.
Yep.
What do you think of that, Toby?
Yeah, they were pretty cool. I mean, that was, I'm trying to think when they switched. Obviously, 330s used to be the inline six-cylinder, and that would almost certainly be the four-cylinder turbo, yeah, on yours?
It is, and it leaves the V8 Mustang for dead.
Yeah. Well, we have to chat to the Mustang driver about that. But
well, it does 0 to 105.8, the Mustang 6.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, look, a lot of people love the old six-cylinder, but that when they went to a four-cylinder turbo, you ended up with more torque, and it was still a very sweet engine. BMW engines are normally pretty cool, and that one's certainly one of the good ones, albeit without that real zinginess that the sixes had. But pretty cool thing. I mean, it's BMW is one of those brands that tends a bit more towards sometimes firmer suspension. They like that the sportier driving side. But overall, a very cool car. So
it's a stunning car to drive. It's got the best sound system I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, you got to step up to some of the newer cars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Was it a Harman Kardon or something on that?
It's also very economical. If it's got four modes, it's got eco, comfort, Sport and Sport Plus, and in Eco I can get over 1,000 kilometres on a trip.
Yeah, right. I mean, Eco mode, it's funny, some cars can feel pretty doughy in Eco mode, so it really dulls the throttle response and they can be pretty bland to drive.
But this, it's an 8-speed gearbox and it's still rocket in Eco.
I think it'd be a ZF gearbox in that, from memory, one of the German ones. But it's a... so either way, I seem to remember the BMWs, they would dull down a little bit in terms of eco, so you'd still get a little bit of a duller throttle pedal, but still sporty-ish. But one of the things they do in eco mode, most cars do in eco mode as well, is they pick a more economical air conditioning cycle, so it's not quite as icy cold, which is fine for most of the year, but if you're on one of those 40-degree days, I find eco mode can be a bit frustrating. I go straight back to normal or sport to get the icy coldness really happening.
On your Don, thank you, mate. Yes, a few suggestions for the cable charging. Troy reckons, don't they get electrocuted when they cut the charging? Oh, no, I don't suppose it's on yet.
No, and I thought that too, and I imagine, as with your home electricity and so on, I imagine there'd be some circuit breaker there if it's short circuits to make sure people aren't getting electrocuted.
Someone else said, why don't they just put a tracker in the handpiece?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, which is a good point too.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there are some solutions to it. Rob from Leichhardt says, Toby, can you tell me when you think we'll realistically see solid-state battery vehicles in production? Toyota are slated for 2027-2028, he thought. Is it worth me holding on? And will lithium-ion vehicles then be devalued pretty quickly?
Certainly the pace of change that we're seeing in the EV world is well ahead of what's happening with internal combustion engines. Internal combustion engines, you're still getting some gains here and there, but it's,
they're a mature technology.
Absolutely. Sometimes, 1 or 2%, whereas almost every new EV that comes out, we're seeing that it's more efficient, another 100 or 150 kilometres of range, more power, everything. So you're usually significant jumps up from where they have been. It doesn't necessarily mean that the cars that are on the market now or were sold a year or two or three ago are going to be worthless or not wanted on the used car market. So, yes, and if we see what's happened in the rest of the car world where, a new model comes out, they start charging a little bit more for it so that you've got to pay a bit more for the better technology. So if that happens, then it should theoretically protect the residuals a bit. But as for solid-state batteries... My only insights are, having talked to some Toyota people previously, I interviewed someone from CATL, the big battery manufacturer in China, maybe about 2 years ago, and they said, yes, we're working on it. It's coming in the next few years. I would anticipate in Australia, maybe in, say, 3 years, 2 or 3 years, we might start seeing it. The big question mark is in what cars. Nissan's another one that's working pretty heavily on solid-state batteries, and they've previously said that they would like to use that technology on something like an electric Nissan Patrol. So where it needs long range, where it really needs that longer range, they can use it for that. And Toyota, for example, I was chatting to some of them this week and said, is that the sort of thing you'll need for proper heavy-duty towing in something like an electric Hilux or a Land Cruiser? And they said, yeah, it's that sort of technology we've got to look towards. But they were even saying we need to go the next technology beyond solid state. So battery chemistry, battery technology generally is where a large chunk of the research and development money is going on EVs, because that is the expensive part, the high-tech part of an EV.
My texter, who doesn't append their name but is cheesed off on not answering their question. Put your name on your questions and then at least we know we're talking to a human and not a robot. Can you tell me if I can walk away from my Chery Tiggo 4 and leave the windows down enough for the dog without having to leave the keys in the car?
Far out. I'm not sure off the top of my head. I mean, some cars try and lock themselves. Some cars do lock themselves when you walk away, so they've got automatic locking. But something like a Tesla, for example, has a mode in there. You can press a button in the app on your phone to put all the windows down, a few centimetres. So it automatically does that. I'm not sure if Chery's got that, and I'm not sure what their setup is. But it's interesting. A lot of the cars these days, some of the settings you can go into, you can delve into all these menus in the screen and set up a whole bunch of functionality for that. So, for example, you might look at how long do you want the headlights to stay on when you get home? So do you want it on for 10 seconds, 30 seconds, 60 seconds? So it may be in a menu like that, but off the top of my head, I'm not sure. So don't know, unfortunately.
All right. Jane in Hobart says, most women would not feel safe in a car without door handles. If you have to physically press the brake in order to close the door, the majority of women I know close and lock all the doors the moment they're in the car.
So you can override it. You can do it normal and just grab the door yourself.
I know what you're saying, though. I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's maybe not an attractive item for female motorists. Yes, all right. 1-300-800-222 is the number. James from Port Ferry has a question. G'day, James.
G'day, guys. I saw that Honda had an announcement the other day that they had a tie-up with QuantumScape for solid-state batteries. I was wondering if you knew anything about that one.
I don't, unfortunately. No, not sure where that's at. And this is the thing. Everything's moving so quickly in terms of the battery manufacturers who are working pretty quickly. But no, I'm not aware of the one with Honda, unfortunately. But as I said, there's a lot going on with solid-state batteries generally. It's not the only the only new chemistry that's been looked at. We've seen sodium ion. We've got other chemistries out there. And every one of them has pros and cons. And the big advantage with solid-state batteries is they've generally got about double the energy density. So you can either halve the size of the battery or double the range of the car. I tend to think most manufacturers will shoot for somewhere in the middle of that. And there are also some safety benefits. So solid state, the electrolyte in the battery. So the electrolyte is sort of like the superhighway that the electrons flow through. And the electrolyte is the current battery technology we know is either a liquid or a gel. So if the battery pack is damaged in a big crash or something, that liquid or gel can ooze out and potentially cause a fire, whereas solid state is apparently less likely to cause a fire in the event of a crash. And keep in mind, EV batteries are pretty well protected. They're designed to be crash worthy, but just like a fuel tank on a car, you hit the thing hard enough and eventually something will go.
Yeah.
I heard QuantumScape's actually tied up with VW as well in a major way, so it looks like it's an alternative to what's coming out of Panasonic and Japan. So it's sort of a very interesting technology. Mm. I think it's about four times the current.
Oh, right, energy density.
Weight and density of the MG got, which is...
Well, that'd be cool if it was. The big question, and one of the negatives with solid state also is price. So it's, I know the manufacturers have been working hard to manufacture it in scale, but also to keep the prices down so that people will still want to buy the cars.
Mm-hmm.
Needed to tow my boat, mate, so hopefully it comes along soon.
Okay, James, thanks, man. Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. Thank you, Lisa. That was Lisa who was wondering about the Chery Tiggo 4 and the dog. Sorry, Lisa, wasn't getting into you. It's good to put your name on it, and then we know who we're talking to. Macca in Mornington says, who knows about these things, Macca says, draining the sump doesn't drain the oil filter. I wish it did. It would make it a lot easier. But there'll always be oil in the oil filter still. I've never filled an oil filter before. Fitting it is not necessary.
There you go.
Thanks, Packer. Good on you. We don't normally do repairs here and valuations either because, as you know, there's plenty of ways you can find out about those things. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Troy from VicPoint says, it's all good regarding EVs, but are the classics still an investment, i.e. the 72 XU1 Tirana, the Mazda RX2? Well, the answer is yes. And they, I guess, in that sense, always will be.
It's
not as though petrol is going to disappear. It's not.
No, it's not. But it's interesting that classic car market. There's obviously fewer people who want to buy a car from the early 1900s because they didn't grow up with them. And I tend to find that the cars a lot of people aspire to are the cars they grew up with, the hot cars they couldn't afford in their 20s. Suddenly they aspire to owning one. I think there'll always be a market for them. But keep in mind, any of those cars, whether you're talking, supercars today or those collectible cars, no one needs them. They're nice to have. They're a toy.
They're a thing you have in the garage for the weekend when you muck around, when you play with them.
Yeah, and we saw throughout the GFC, the global financial crisis, that prices for a lot of those things came off suddenly because people don't need them, and some people sold them, and the prices dropped off a bit. But since then, they've rocketed. And as I remember chatting to, well, I think recently, cars have been a better investment than a whole bunch of other classic investments out there. Will that keep going? Who knows? You know, it's all down to supply and demand. But ultimately, there's going to be a limit there somewhere as to what someone wants to pay for a classic car.
Yep. Scott from Blacktown. G'day, Scott. Hello, Scott.
How you going, Phil?
Yeah, pretty good. What's up?
I've got an iX35 Hyundai, 2018 turbo diesel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sort of tossed up whether the transmission can go electric, but I'm old school. I'm 72. I was born in 72, so there's too many wires and the electronic side of it. There's too much going on.
Yeah.
Well, I've got some bad news for you. If you're going to buy a new car at any point, it doesn't matter whether you buy petrol, diesel, or electric. There's a lot of technology and a lot of wires, and it's if anything, the EV is going to be a tiny bit simpler because it doesn't have all the engine control units and all of that. Yes, it's running the motors and so on and the battery charging, but they're all going to have a lot of technology and a lot of electronics going on. So unfortunately, that's the way of the world. And these days, there have been various studies on when things go wrong with a car. Often it's these days the electronic side, whereas 30 or 40 years ago, you could pop the bonnet and maybe see a hose or something that wasn't on and adjust that and keep going.
Yeah, I'm saying that I can plug a scanner in and it'll give a code and it'll
tell you
what thing I can replace. There is none. It'll go back to the manufacturer. Right? Hey, you got to go back to the dealer and it becomes a... stuff. I've had BMWs and stuff in the past, Mercedes. If some little tiny thing that looks like the size of a matchbox, it almost breaks the bank.
But again, it's even with you buy a pure petrol car these days, and I hear what you're saying, but you plug into the scanner, the OBD, and it'll still, in a lot of instances, I think it's going to be going back to the manufacturer if there's a fault there. But
sometimes maybe do. It'll tell you what part you can say it's sensor bank, blah, 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 and you can replace a part. And
often it is sensors, I think, these days. Like a sensor goes and suddenly it wants to shut the car down or put it in a limp home mode or something. Sometimes the issue itself may not be enormous. It's just come down to a tiny sensor that's letting the side down. But keep in mind the three main things to go wrong on an EV is the battery, something with the battery, something with the inverter, which is the thing that converts it from DC to AC. And something with the electric motors. But the motors are pretty simple and tend to be fairly reliable. The other two have a fair bit going on in terms of ones and zeros flying around the joint. But they can still have issues.
Thanks, Scott. Good on you, mate. Appreciate it. 1-300-800-222 is the number. I guess Tesla sold a lot of cars last month, did they?
They sold an enormous amount of cars, yeah. So the
I mean, only rate, they were month before, they were.
They were the top-selling car in the country.
But they still would be, wouldn't they?
Well, so we're getting the rest of the sales figures tomorrow for the rest of the industry, but Tesla came out today through the EV Council. And, just over 8,500 cars, and their top seller was the Model Y, a bit over 8,000, which I went back and looked at when the last time a car hit that sales level, and it was a Toyota Hilux in, I think it was December 2022.
Yeah.
So you had to go back almost 3.5 years. To see a car doing that. So, as I said, the rest of the sales figures come out tomorrow, but it's almost certain that that thing's going to be the top-selling car again. And if you look at that, 8,000 cars, we're expecting something like 100, maybe a bit over 100,000 cars sold across the industry. So that in itself will account for 8% of the sales and 8%, roughly 8% of EVs before you add all the other brands in. So it's going to be an interesting sales figure.
Yeah, it will be.
But one little caveat for that, Tesla often pushes pretty hard end of quarter. So, I would guess that the July sales figures maybe won't be quite as solid. They've had a big push towards the end of the quarter, but we'll see.
We'll see. All righty. Sean from Taree. G'day, Sean.
G'day, Phil and Toby. I'm currently driving a Toyota Camry 2014, and I went to the local dealer and see about getting a new petrol Camry. And they said they don't have them anymore. So, I wasn't really interested in an EV, and the hybrid because I do a lot of highway miles, I didn't think the hybrid would be my cup of tea because they run on 95 octane now and they're a bit dear to run on the open road. So I've been looking at Mazdas or Subarus. I'm just wondering what other options you might advise me to consider.
So you'd prefer not an SUV, yeah? You'd prefer a sedan or a lower riding car?
Well, I did, but I'm open to the SUVs. They're I looked at a couple and they're okay, but sedans are pretty limited now that in the petrol riding.
Yeah, they are.
So the first thing I'd say is I wouldn't walk away from the Camry just on that. Last year I took a Camry across the Nullarbor and I can't remember what we were getting. It was around about 5.5 litres 100, something like that. So it was still fairly economical. Obviously,
it was a hybrid, Toby?
Yeah, it was hybrid, yeah. So that's all they've done now in Camry for 2-3 years, something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's exactly the same car as you'd be looking at now. And it was, as I said, it was fairly economical. I was impressed with how it ran generally. So yeah, I wouldn't walk away from that because that's a solid option. But you can look at obviously, finding a diesel car. Diesel would be one of the for your usage, for high mileage, freeway cruising, a diesel would do it pretty nicely. But there aren't a whole lot of them these days. So take mid-sized SUVs, for example. The only one I can think of off the top of my head is a Kia Sportage, and they're about to, I believe, discontinue the diesel version. So, and they, you know, they'll head down eventually the hybrid-only path and all that sort of stuff. So it's, so yeah, something like a Kia Sportage diesel might do it pretty nicely. I haven't driven this yet, but there's a BYD Seal 6 coming out in the next few weeks. I think it's in 3 or 4 weeks, something like that. And that's got a plug-in hybrid system, and that's going to be doing, it's sort of $35,000, $40,000, I think, somewhere around there. So it's sharp in terms of the pricing. On paper, it looks like they're going to get pretty long range out of it. I think for the media launch, they're looking to do Sydney to Melbourne on a charge or on a tank. So that's an option. And a lot of those plug-in hybrids, it's interesting, those plug-in hybrid EVs, they have a crazy low fuel number. If you look at the official fuel figure for them, they're often sometimes less than 1 litre 100, 1.5, 2 litres 100, somewhere around there. Every time I've driven one, once they get into hybrid mode, so once they're running purely as a hybrid, you've drained the battery on them, I find they tend to use, depending on the size of the car, somewhere between 6, 7, 8 litres 100, something like that. So I tend to find some of them will match a regular hybrid. I don't think I've had any beat a regular hybrid in terms of their fuel use, and some of them will use a bit more than a regular hybrid once you've drained the battery pack. So yeah, maybe that's not a terrific example for you, but some of those offer a fair bit of bang for buck in terms of the features and equipment and so on in them.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
Food for thought, eh? Fred from Perth. G'day, Fred.
Hello. How are you?
Pretty
I'm
good.
Toby.
Pretty good,
love
Fred. Thank you.
And Toby, hopefully you'll say nice things because I'm about to take delivery of a Polestar.
All right, cool.
Toby's
getting a Polestar.
Interested in your commentary on that. I have a favourite motoring writer who I won't name, who I read recently, also has a pretty big kind of commercial business going, so it's sort of taking a bit of a shine off the always amusing commentary that he writes. Anyway, that's another story.
Yeah.
That's
nice.
Another story. But just interested in your thoughts on that car. What's good, what to look out for. Hopefully it's not a complete lemon.
No, it's not a lemon at all. I really like it.
I was really impressed by it, and a beautifully designed car, I thought.
Yeah, it is. And it's, as you would have noticed, it's got a lot of space, particularly rear seat space. It's almost sort of limousine-like in terms of the space in the back. And, you know, the big talking point is obviously no rear windows. So you
it's a bit weird.
So you've got to get used to that.
It is a bit weird, Fred. I've driven one, and that is a bit weird. I mean, you don't look through the rear window. You look at a camera.
And it's
I have driven it before I committed, but
And even little things, you go to if you're merging in traffic and you go to thank someone, and I'll sometimes give them a wave. That doesn't work, so you've got to come up with a plan B for that. But, the Polestar 4, I think,
is put the window down and get your arm out the window.
Yeah, or a lot of people these days are doing the hit the hazard lights just for a second or two to do it.
Right.
But, there's Yeah, I think it's a great car. It's comfortable. It's really good to drive. The tech on it, I think they had some issues software-wise, tech-wise early on. But they've, I believe, addressed those with software updates and so on. So I think that'd be okay. But but yeah, it's a great car in that end of the market. And then, I'm sure you took up. They were doing some end of financial year deals on them as well.
Good deal. Yeah, I've got on a single motor, not the crazy fast one.
Yeah, which is fine. I mean, these days I find most of the electric cars, I'm happy, just as happy or happier with the rear-wheel drive or the two-wheel drive versions, because you can get a fair bit of performance out of them. And you tend to find the rear-wheel drives, if they've got the same battery capacity, will have a longer range because they've got a little bit less weight and so on in them. And sometimes they get a bit further as well. So it's pretty cool. But Polestar 4 is a great car. It's it's obviously pricier than, I guess, the sweet spot of the market, the sort of $50,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 end of the market where most of the activity is. But you get a bit more space and a bit more luxury in it.
Yeah, no, it seems like a beautiful car. Anyway, but thanks for your show. Really, really love it.
No worries. Thanks, Fred. Bye-bye. Yes, the Polestar. You know, the one I drove, it was a two-motor one.
Yeah.
It's got
a lot of grunt. It's
got teeth-rattling acceleration. You don't need it. Like,
no, when, a lot
are
of
you
don't. It?
When are you going to use it?
And I've driven plenty of EVs that you just sort of go, wow, that's a lot of performance. But
And you're thinking, when? I mean, it's fun to show your friends.
But good to blast off the lights.
I don't know when you ever use it.
Yeah.
You can blast off the lights. That's true. Yeah. lines free 1-300-800-222 1-300-800-222 Fernando, hello.
Hello. Hi, guys.
Hi. Hey.
Look, I've got a question around the Ford Raptor. So I've been looking at trying to work out whether I can get one. And with the prices of fuel and volatility of petrol in particular, I've been trying to find out whether or not they're going to make a hybrid variant. And I've reached out to Ford themselves. I've looked online and I can't seem to find any answer that.
Yeah, whether they're going to do it. I don't know. And I was, I think a couple of months ago, I was with the Ford boss, the global Ford boss, Jim Farley, and it's almost like they're running two streams. Yes, they're pushing down, obviously, performance and electric and in some cases hybrid, but they are also, what they've got in the F-150 Raptor, which we don't get, and the Ranger Raptor are obviously focused a lot more on performance, driving excitement, the sound, all that sort of stuff.
Right.
So I don't know. They have got, I believe there's an update to Raptor happening in the next year or two. If you look at, they just did a significant or a decent update to the regular Ranger. They haven't touched the Raptor yet. So I would imagine it's going to have something happening in the next year or two. Like, you'd think something's going to happen, but I'm reading between the lines here. Everything I was getting from them, like, just, they won't tell you. They're not going to tell me outright. But everything I was getting suggested that it's probably not going to go down the hybrid path in the next year or two. It's probably inevitable eventually. I hope I don't eat my words on that. I genuinely have no insight into this. I'm getting it from sometimes a look on their faces, whatever, like trying to figure out which way stuff's going. So I genuinely don't know, but I wouldn't be holding my breath for it.
Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot.
No worries. Cool. Thanks, Fernando. All right. Old mate, that's my previous caller. Who did a lot of driving from Perth, says, old mate can buy a Mazda 3.3-litre six-cylinder diesel mild hybrid, which would work fine.
Yeah, it would. But I think it will use more fuel than a Camry hybrid.
It will, won't it?
So I've done a fair few Ks in those. So that engine they use across 60, 70, 80 and 90. And every time I've been in one, I can't think of getting it down to 5.5 liters, 100. So it's nice engine, but not sure if it's necessarily going to have the fuel saving that he wants.
Taff from Maribyrnong says, if you put a deposit on an EV SUV and they say it's on the ship, can you ask for the build HIN number of that promised vehicle so you can't be fobbed off?
The VIN number, I think it'd be.
The VIN number,
Vehicle identification number. I think you can try to. I'm just trying to think how much detail they want to do. Sometimes they will change the VIN if a car gets too damaged or something, you know, when it lands or whatever. But yeah, I know with Tesla and others, they'll often give you the VIN sort of as it's on the ship, more or less, and you can then track it and see when you're going to end up
with it.
Because
if you're going to put a deposit on something, it should be a thing, shouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not just an idea.
No.
Not just a, we will build this at some point.
No, sometimes they do. So, yeah. And Toyota was having that during COVID. They had people ordering cars and they were, in some instances, 18-month delays. So the thing
Hadn't been built.
No. They probably haven't even dug the materials out of the ground yet. Like it was they still had a long way to go on that one.
Yeah.
So, no, sometimes you absolutely can order, put a deposit down on a car that doesn't exist. Mm. Tesla are experts at that. They took deposits on the Roadster, which still isn't on sale. It was due to be on sale about 4 years ago.
Hmm.
And yeah, people put down some significant deposits on those overseas. So yeah, you can, but equally, you know, check with them. Hey, tell me when this thing's going to arrive. But check the contract too that you're signing to make sure it doesn't say, you know, it's got to have an end clause in there somewhere. They can't make you wait a year or two if you're not ready to.
Hmm.
But yeah, definitely try and ask them for a VIN. I'm just trying to think how much detail they want to give. And, you know, if it hasn't been built yet, obviously there won't be a VIN.
John from Longjetty says, Toby, as with the Volvo, the Polestar rear view camera, how would you feel if external rear view mirrors became cameras?
Well, they already have. So there's,
Really?
Hyundai, Genesis, Audi and others have side mirrors that are cameras. And I've driven plenty of them that use those as cameras, and they do take some significant adjustment.
Hang on, really? I haven't been in a car like this. So, when you look at the mirror, you're seeing a camera.
Yeah. So they've got a little screen just inside the window.
Okay.
On either side, so a little screen. You look inside, obviously not at the mirror.
Do they have anything on the outside at all?
Yeah, they've got a little. So it's like a tiny little mirror sticking out. Oh, it's a camera. So it's about a quarter the size of your normal wing mirror, and that's the advantage of them is they give you less aero drag, so more range in an EV.
Mm.
The other advantages of them is they're typically really good in the wet. So let's say it's hammering down rain. I've been in a lot of rain, like raining really heavily, and you don't get a single drop on the lens. It manages to keep it all away, so you have quite a clear view on the screen. The negative, you know, often if you want to widen the field of view, you might sort of move your head a little bit to look a bit further and see if there's a bike in your blind spot or whatever. You can't do that. What you see in the camera is it, but it tends to offer you a wider field of view than you'll get from a normal mirror.
Charlie from Karratha. G'day, Charlie.
Yeah, how are you going, guys? Just a quick one. I live in the Pilbara. I'm driving a 92 Land Cruiser. I'm the original owner of that one, and still going well, but looking at possibly going back to Perth and getting an EV because it's not the most economical car once it's just putting around in Perth and I need to.
How many Ks have you done it now, Charlie? So it's 30, what is it, 33 years old? Yeah.
Yes, 671.
So it's an 80 series, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
So 1.8Z, original motor, original gearbox.
Really? Gifts. Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Wow, far out. It would still be worth something. People love those 80 series.
Yeah,
they do. But, yeah, I'm looking at going tech and I've driven the Tesla Y. I've driven the Toyota BZ. I see Mazda have just released a 6E based on a Chinese format.
Mm.
I like the BZ because it felt like a Toyota brand bunny because it's got controls on the steering column. And the like, and because when I drove the Tesla, I was driving a computer screen.
Yeah.
Trying to find anything.
Yeah.
Thoughts, comments as to...
Well, yeah, you've struck on the best part of the Toyota, which is that is the normality. And I actually drove an update of the BZ4X Touring this week, which is the slightly longer one. And that's how I summed it up is that it is the best part of it is it feels like other Toyotas and you've got normal controls. And the other advantage it's got is the driver assistance systems, which in some cars can get a little bit beepy and bongy in terms of alerting you to things, in that Toyota's really well calibrated. So it's so you don't have to, I find, just get in it and drive it. Don't switch anything off. It all works. It's fine. So yeah, the BZ4X, that's its advantages. As you probably noticed, if you start shopping around at other models, particularly the Chinese stuff, you'll get more bang for buck. You'll get you know, more gadgets, more features for less money, essentially. So I guess it depends how much you value that normality and the regular driving of the Toyota compared with the others. But yeah, you're right. That Mazda 6e is built by what's by Deepal, which is one of the brands from Chang'an, one of the big Chinese car makers. And Mazda turned to them to give them an EV, basically rebrand it. So it's styled as a Mazda, but built by by Deepal. So yeah, but the Tesla still, you know, the Tesla is a top seller for good reason. It's a popular car, but as you say, you've got to get your head around the tech. And coming from an 80 series Land Cruiser into that, it's going to be a big turning point. You know, something like a Kia EV5 or a Hyundai Ioniq 5 or 6, they will also have a bit more of that normal going on. But but yeah, the Toyota's probably close to the top of that.
Okay.
All right, Charlie.
Thanks for your time tonight.
Thanks Charlie. Mate. Good on you. Bye-bye. Yeah, they do. They go forever, those things, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
They do.
Yeah. That's the one he's got there is the diesel engine. So it was a naturally aspirated diesel, which I don't think I've ever driven, but I've spoken to people who have, and apparently it's fairly leisurely.
Okay.
And its acceleration, it goes forever,
yeah.
But you're not going to be blasting around the joint.
Still driving a 26-year-old Mercedes ML320 around Sydney.
Oh, there you go.
That's manufactured in Germany.
Oh.
And it's a dream. Heavy on fuel, though.
So, because manufactured in Germany, most of them were manufactured in the US, in the States. And the early ones that came into the country, the quality on them was pretty rubbish. They all had pretty average fit and finish, and Merck had some quality issues with that American factory early on.
Mm.
Sold it all now, but early on it was a bit of a struggle.
Hi, Toby. Harking back to your conversation with the Ford boss, he said there was an imminent decision pending bringing the Bronco to Australia. Is there any news about that? And he was also talking about an Australian-style ute. Any news on that?
Yeah. Good memory. So the Bronco initially is looking more like being the Bronco Sport, which is built in China.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so it's got the cool retro design. It doesn't have the really rugged sort of capability and so on of the real Bronco, what some people call the real Bronco. So we are certainly getting, or it looks like we're getting that Bronco Sport coming out of China. The other Bronco, I don't think is a major chance at this stage. Which is a bit of a shame. In terms of the ute, the Ford ute, I don't think that was ever going to be a short or even medium term option. I think that, well, maybe medium term, but I don't imagine we'll hear anything about that for at least another year or 18 months. But as I said, he seemed certainly very keen on it and was keen to do it. So I'd be surprised if we didn't see something in the next couple of years. But I don't think it'll happen in the short term.
All right, John from Queanbeyan, I think we can squeeze you in before the end. John, g'day.
Oh, hi, how you going? I'm just wondering, I'm looking at buying a X5 50i, the latest model with the new updated N63 engine, the TU3 or something like that. Is that more reliable than the earlier version?
You mean the updated version of the V8?
Yeah, because we had the older one, the 2010, plagued with problems with the valve stem seals and timing chains and fuel injectors and all that sort of stuff. But when it went good, you know what I mean? Like, when you had problems with it, you had problems.
Yeah, look, I'm not sure what they've done in terms of reliability and durability on that engine, so I wouldn't be able to give you any insight into that. The only thing is, it's an incredible engine in terms of refinement, performance, revs really cleanly. Everything about it is really cool. I drove a version of that engine. I think it was that engine in a Range Rover recently, and it was pretty cool.
Hmm.
Well, I heard the newer one has got like forged piston and rings, and they've done something to the cylinder block too as well to like strengthen everything up in it. Yeah. So
okay.
Yeah, right.
Okay. All right, John. Thank you. Sorry we couldn't finish up there because we're being beaten by the end of the time. We've got to go to the news. Terrific, Toby. As always, great to have you. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good.
Good on you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.